Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Mem Beit. We were still not quite at the end of the sugya in the Gemara, and we were talking about various things that the Gemara is telling us how to deal with. In practical terms, where the Rabbanan essentially gave us ways to deal with life despite the various Yisurim that could make things very, very difficult for us. Certainly Muktzah was one of them. So we were talking about, as I pointed out before, the transition from after Rabbi Eliezer to Mila to how it is to deal with the also affects the way the Lashon of the Mishnah. So we were talking about over here, okay, you can go ahead and pick up your child who is holding a stone. We talked about that yesterday. And we talked about the difference between being Mevatel, a kiss to a Tinok, versus the Shaila about moving the Evan in terms of Muktzah. Okay, so we got up to Tanan, which is one line up from the bottom on Amud Beis. Tanan. Notel adam et binova Evan biyado. So what are we talking about over here that we're allowed to actually move him, and if we're being moderate, so apparently we're not considering it for him to be the one who's moving the Evan directly. If that's the case, how do we explain yesterday's Gemara that you would be chayiv for carrying the kiss? Why would you be chayiv for the carrying the kiss at all? Because you're not the one who's carrying it, obviously, because otherwise how could you move the stone? Says the Gemara, the truth is that what we're dealing with over here is a dispensation. You really are not allowed to carry the tinok with the stone. And what we're talking about over here is a particular case. B'tinok sheyesh lo ga'aguin al aviv. We're talking about over here a child who desperately wants to be picked up by his father, and we are afraid of the psychological damage that will accrue if the father refuses to pick him up. Now, Tostos, as I pointed out to you yesterday, okay, but so get him to throw away the stone. No, but then he'll start crying. Right? So what we've got over here is basically a very practical kind of situation. It comes up all of the time. And obviously, we're not considering this to be a sekhanas nefashis. We're not being matil matir d'oraisa. But the Rabbanan were not koveya isure muktza, even in cases where you're going to have a psychological damage, or the possibility of psychological damage. And as we'll see later, we include in our discussion over here as well issues of financial damage, like what you can do, and even convenience. In other words, questions of how do you deal with situations where you've got muktzah and you need to be able to use the thing which the muktzah is on, and so on. Ask the Gemara, then, if we're talking about a case where we're doing this as a special dispensation, why did we mention a rock? I mean, we could be talking about a case of he's carrying something valuable. I feel a dinar nami. He should be able to be carrying a coin. So why in the world would Rava say it's only if it's a stone, but if it's something valuable, then it's usur? What possible difference would it make in terms of the psychological damage? No, it isn't because of that, says the Gemara. It's a completely different issue. The reason that it's usur by the dinner is not because of that. It's because even enough dinner enough it's very simple. If you're going to have something valuable and it falls out of the kid's hand and it falls down, it has nothing to do with carrying the kid. You're not even allowed to hold his hand and walk with him if he's holding a dinner, because the point is that we're afraid that if it falls, then the father's going to come to carry it. So because of that we weren't matur. Tanik abasi de Rava, amotzi kelim kupalim. So in other words, what does it come out over here? According to Rava, it works out that this is a special dispensation, but that normally, based on the case that we had right away at the beginning of the Gemara, where you're carrying a child who has a kiss, that over there you would be chayev al hakis. So then that would mean that the person who is carrying someone, who is carrying something, the person who is carrying the person who's carrying is the one who's considered to be carrying. So that would mean that in the case of Hotsah, you would be chayev. In a case of muksa, you would be aser, if it wouldn't be for the dispensation. In fact, there's actually a braita that seems to confirm this, because it says, Amotzi kelav mekupalim umunachim akitefo, sanda levita ba'otov biyado chayav. So obviously, if you're carrying out your own clothes, which are not being worn, there's no difference between carrying clothes or carrying anything else. The only reason we allow you to walk out dressed is because that's not called carrying. That's called that you're wearing your clothes and a bottle to your body. But if you're carrying clothes that are over your shoulders, or you've got your sandals or your rings or whatever, you're holding them in your hand, of course you would be chayiv. V'im haya milubash behem patur. On the other hand, the Levisha is bottled to the individual. That's Agav the Yodam. Now, that, of course, is almost a truism. But now, here's the point that's important. If you carry somebody else, and that somebody else is wearing his clothes, and he's got sandal lav baraglav and dabal tav biyadav, note the difference, not biyado, biyadav, meaning that his rings are on his various fingers where they're supposed to be, then you would be potter legamre. Why? Because the chai nosei et atzmo, which is Rabbi Nassan, and as far as the clothing is concerned, the clothing is part of the person. As a matter of fact, we said even if it's b'mita, you'd be potter up because of the mita. But that means that if you would carry out this person that would be holding his clothes, then you would be chayiv. Okay, now why is that? Apparently, because Rava is right. The individual who carries the person who is holding something that he's not allowed to carry is considered to be directly carrying it, and Mimele would be chayav anotza. Now, the Mishnah continued in the case where you've got a stone inside of a basket. And it says over there, you're allowed to carry it. But that, as we mentioned, the Mishnah, it immediately raises the question, isn't it a basis to davar aser? And therefore, the whole thing should be aser. It's not, you're not carrying the stone with the basket. You're carrying a davar muksa. Just as muksa as the stone itself is, so too is the basis. Omer Rabba Bar Bachana Rabbi Yochanan, well, we didn't say you can carry a basket that has a stone only in it. We're talking about a basket that's full of various peyrot, which means that it's a basis l'dover ha'oser v'hamuter. And in this case, since the peyrot are obviously more valuable than a rock, so then that's considered to be essentially a basis l'dover ha'muter. And therefore, you can move it. Okay, but, I mean, I understand. All right, it's not a basis l'dover ha'oser. Fine. But now I don't understand. So can't you just, like, tip it over and let the stone fall out? And then you can, when anything that falls out when it's tipped over, you can just pick up those pears, put them back in, and carry it. But why are we allowing you to, like, walk around with a stone? So you should take it out, no? Just throw the whole thing out. And then niktinu biyadayim. Well, that's because Rabbi Eloi Omarav said, we're going to see in a slightly different case, but it's the same thing over here. We're talking about over here, beperota mitanfin. We're talking about the type of peros that are sticky and they'll get dirty, and if they land on the floor, you know, it's bad news. You don't want to do that. So that must be the case over here also. We don't want to dump them. Okay, why don't you do what the Iranians do? I mean, what they use is centrifuges, right? So all you got to do is linurinure. So just start spinning that basket, man. All the peros go to the side. The stone, which is heavier, is going to end up in the middle, and then you just pour out the stone, and then you don't have to pour out the perot. So because of that, now there are those who are going over your Ella, meaning that we've given up on our approach because there's still going to be a way to get rid of the Evan. And instead, says Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rava, we're talking about a basket over here that's got like a place where the peros are going to fall out. So we actually are happy to have the stone there, and we treat it as if it's part of the dofen of the kalkala, and because of that, it isn't even muktza, because I'm needed in order to stopper up the hole. Now, this is a little bit problematic, because, I mean, to say Ella means we've given up. There's no way to move a kalkala with an evan in it. The problem is that the Rambam brings both possibilities. He says, well, you know, you could move it either where you have perot that are mitanfim, or you could move it if there is the stone that you want to be there in order to prevent the thing from falling, the peros from falling out. I mean, obviously the Rambam didn't have an Ella in the Gemara, And he does not deal with the question of Linarino Niune. So I don't know what Pshat is. Sometime he must have had a different Girsa, and this was just an Ibais Eima. Okay, we'll leave that. And I just want to mention it to you. And the Mishnah goes on to say, Mitaltalim Trumat Me'ah, together with Trumat Torah, and together with Chulin, and so on. So why can you do that? Well, Omer of Chista, what we're talking about over here is the Truma Tahora is on the bottom, and the Truma Tameya is on top. And because of that, you have no choice but to move the whole thing and get it to the table and so on, and then you can take what you want to eat. But if the Tahor was Lamala and the Tameya was Lamata, so then take the Tahor out of the basket and leave the Tameya behind. So that would not give you any kind of heter. Says, wait a minute, and if the Torah is underneath, don't we have the same problem, which is that you could just let everything roll out to the ground and then pick up the Torah, Truma? I mean, why do I have to move the Tameh at all? And it was here, in fact, that Rabbi Eloi had given that teretz that he quoted from Rav, that we are talking about Peirot Amitanfim Askinan. Asks the Gemara from the following brisa. And here it says, beferish, not like Rav Chista. Rav Chista says, you can only do this, only if there was no way to take the Torah away. And you have to deal with the Tameh before getting to the Torah. Here it says, beferish, and Abraiza. Absolutely not. Makes no difference to me whether the Tahora was Lamala and the Tameh was Lamata, or whether the Tameh was Lamala and the Torah was Lamata. I mean, man, you can't get further away from Rav Chista than this. Do you have to do Rav Chista? Amalacha Rav Chista, no, actually, it's different. Because when I said it on the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is talking about a case where you needed to move the Tahor Truma in order to eat it. But you did not need to move anything out of the way. So then why are you moving the whole thing to get it to the table? So I have to explain to you, well, we've got to be talking about a case where you couldn't do anything else. So since you don't have any options, you pick it up even with the tummy. Masha Inkin over here, the Braita, which says it doesn't matter whether it's on top or on the bottom. Well, of course not. Because the Braita is talking about where you needed to move it out of where it is. If you need to move it out of where it is, it's not going to do you much good to throw it out on the ground, because then you're going to have a bigger problem to move it. At least right now, it's Mordechai. Oh, man. This is, even though I said it, that everyone who comes on is automatically muted. I don't know why it doesn't work. Okay, anyway, so there we're talking about where it wouldn't help you to throw it out on the ground, because in the end, I'm going to have to be moving it. So that's weird. I mean, like, what makes Rav Chista decide arbitrarily that, well, the Mishnah must be talking about where it's a Tzara Gufo, and therefore he has to explain, well, why would it be Mutter? It's only going to be Mutter in the case where I wasn't able to move it directly because it was on the bottom. I said, what do you need that for? Just say that it's the same case as the Brisa. Everything just works out fine without putting in all the conditions, right? I needed Letzorich Mekomo, and since I needed Letzorich Mekomo, so I'm moving the whole thing out of the way. Why did he do that? Omar Rava, he did that because he felt constrained by the Mishnah itself to do it, you see. Because the truth is that the Mishnah works out better the way that Rav Chista was learning, that it's talking about over here, that you wanted to eat it and not that you needed to move it away. Why do I say that? Because take a look at the later part of the Mishnah, which will be coming up soon, and that is that if you leave money on your pillow, so then you move the pillow and the money falls off, right? Now, Rabbi Barbachana explained over there that this is talking about where you need the pillow. So because of that, just don't touch the money, don't move the money, and just move the pillow so that the money falls off. But suppose you would need to move the whole thing out of its place, and therefore it won't make any difference to you that you get the money, because now the money's on the bed. You need to move everything off of here, including the money on the car. In that case, if it was Letzorich Mekomo, as Rabbi Yochanan explained, then you would be able to move it even though the money is on it, as long as it wasn't put there beferish, as we'll see later, obviously, to make it a basis ledover Oh, sir, but it was forgotten there. So then you can move it while the money is on it. Now, that means that the last part of the Mishnah, which is the next Mishnah coming up, which is just an old part of our Mishnah, if the Mishnah was talking about Tzorach Gufo, so then Rav Chista assumed that that would mean that we're talking about over here also in the ratio. We're moving it. We're not going to start changing cases, which would be extremely confusing. So the Mishnah is talking about cases where I need the thing, not that I need the place. So Reisha Nami L'Tzorach Gufo. So because of that, Rav Chista says, okay, so then if it's a Tzorach Gufo, how do you explain the fact that we are allowed to move something that I don't intend to use? I only want to use the Truma Torah. Must be I can't get to the Truma Torah without moving the whole thing. That's why he said that. But in Achinami, it's not that you can't do it the other way if it indeed would be the Tzorach Gufo. Now, Rabbi Yehuda came to say a very big kiddush. Rabbi Yehuda said that in the event that you've got meduma, so what is meduma? Remember that if one part truma falls into 100 parts of chulin, so then the halacha is that what you can do is you can take out one part at random from the mixture, that is to say the equivalent of what fell in, you call that the truma, and then you're allowed to eat the rest of it. And he is saying, now, that's okay to do on Shabbos, even though it looks very much like you're being mitakein. And why, in fact, are you not being mitakein, asked the Gemara. You do have to take it out. And so the fact that you do have to take it out is the same thing as you do have to take out truma in the first place, right? Okay, so you're not allowed to take out truma in the first place. Why? Because it's considered to be mitakein what's left. So why are you allowed to be, so to speak, mitakein in the same way by taking out truma in the second place? I don't get it. Answers Gemara, because Rabbi Yehuda holds like the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer's shita is that we do not view meduma as being mixed, as a normal mixture. In other words, what we look at is normally in a mixture, you've got things that we, so to speak, have been homogenized. But here, the way that we view meduma lahalakha is that we see the truma as being in a separate container, not being spread out evenly. It's not a homogeneous mixture. Therefore, I'm not fixing anything because it isn't mixed. I'm just taking it out. What makes you say that? Well, I'll show you. Because Lamaisa, the Mishnah in Truma, says like this. If you have a sa'a of truma that falls into less than the required 100, right? So is now the whole thing is nidma'u. Now, suppose something falls out of that mixture into more chulin. So this mixture became aser, right? Now some of it is falling in, and it falls into another place. So Rabbi Eliezer says, look, you don't prorate the amount of truma to chulin. What you do is you treat the original mixed as midamat kitruma vadai. You treat it as if the truma itself fell in. So it's like I moved it from the first one, I moved it into the second one. And I did not view it as an homogenized mixture. As the Chachamim say, no, it's prorated. We always view mixtures as being homogenized. And therefore, ena meduma medameya ela lafi cheshbon. We always view meduma, no matter how many steps down it is, we make it prorated. So you see, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you look at it as if the truma still exists in situ. Wait a minute, that's a chumrah, man. I mean, even the shamat, like, sure, Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, if I can't identify where the truma is, and I don't want to be makel to say that it was homogenized, to be able to go with a prorated basis for the next piece, that's a big chumrah. But now you're trying to say, and because of that, we actually will view it as if it's all in one place, l'kula, and it won't be considered to be a tikkun, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda says, well, where do you get that from? He never said such a thing, l'kula mishamadle. True, says him. Okay. It's not that he's going like Rabbi Eliezer. He's going like Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon says even l'kula, because kidetznan in the Mishnah in Truma, that if a sa'a of Truma falls into 100 sa'a of chulin, okay, so now we've got something that is mutter, except that it requires for me to be ma'alin. I have to take out that one sa'a, right? Not that one sa'a, but one sa'a, which then effectively becomes that sa'a as the tikkun of the meduma. All this, of course, min rabbona, because otherwise min yoraisa would really Bibotos machlokes, whether midiraisa you need really need 100 to 1, and we base that on the asirit, mina asirit of Trumas Meiser, or whether that's just the Rabbonin idea that they were making a machmir to make it 100 to 1 instead of Bota Barov. But in any event, what about if you didn't get a chance to take out that one sa'ah until another sa'ah falls in? So they speak like Biat Shanaf Lacheres. Okay, so now you've got a problem, because now you've got only, instead of 1 to 100, you only have 1 to 50. So because of that, Harezo Asura, it's Usher, because now you don't have a mixture that's 1 in 100. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, you could still be Makel and take out 2 sa'ah. So in other words, that means that Rabbi Shimon looks at that first sa'ah as basically it was sitting on the side. And now another one fell in. Okay, so now that one has to be sitting on the side. So now when I take out the two of them, I took out effectively 2 pieces of truma that were sitting on the side. But neither of them were part of a real mixture. So if they weren't part of a real mixture, that means I wasn't being metaken the rest of the mixture. All I was doing is doing my duty of taking truma out, but not the way that it's normally metaken, because it was already out. Well, I didn't understand. I mean, you're assuming that that's what he holds. Maybe that's not what he holds. Maybe all that he's saying is that the Ma'atam Ba'akam Miflegel Machokis between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon is not whether we view it as distinct things. It could be that simply the question is like this. The Tanakama holds that Afagav the Naflu B'Zacharza, even though there's time in between the two Nefilas, what's the difference if there's time? Given the Naflu B'Vat Achat, Kegon the Naflu B'Vat Achat, it would be the same as falling in together, because it was still there. We only deal with a mixture when the mixing is complete. And we view the mixture as an ongoing event so long as you didn't do the ha'ala. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, no. The truth is that as soon as the first saw of truma fell in, what was the din? The din was that the whole thing becomes mut, right? Because of bitul. It's just that you are mechuyev midrabbanan to be ma'aleh. Okay, so now you've got 101 that's chulin. In terms of the din, I'm not saying you don't have to take out the saw, but it's not as if it's usser because of being like truma. So the second one is now going to be even more batal. It's going to be batal in 101. The first one was batal 1 to 100. Now it's 1 to 101. What's the problem? But, I mean, Rabbi Shimon may simply hold that that doesn't mean that you're not b'chuyev to be ma'aleh. If the Chiyuv of Mala could be considered to be a tikkun, you're not able to prove from here that he holds it's not even a tikkun. Says Gemara, okay, fine. So then there's another idea. Rabbi Yehuda was saying that he's going like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. And what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, you don't even have to be Mala. That's the point. Yes, ultimately you have to be Mala, okay? But I mean, suppose you got this big, gigantic thing. So what you can do is, you could be notain enav bitzadze. You can decide, and this is this way you won't have a problem on Shabbos. You look at the right side. You say, you know what? After Shabbos, I'll be male from the right side. So somewhere over there, there's going to be a saw of truma. And then you can eat from the other side, which is nowhere near that part, but you don't have to actually physically pick it up and move it away. So because of that, you are allowed to move it away. What? It feels like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The whole point of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is that you're not allowed to move it away. His point was that if you're eating from the other side, so then you don't need to move it. But obviously, as you get closer and closer to the right side, where you said you're going to move it out, you can't keep eating. You get to one point where you're going to have to move it out. But Rabbi Yehuda, and that you can't do. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't. So then that means that he doesn't hold of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. How can you say Misavali Kavase? He's holding like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He's Bedafka arguing on him. I mean, look, we spell it out in the Braita. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, you can even be Malinus, Amaduma, Be'echa, Be'meir. You can actually physically pick it up, take it out. That's what he's saying basically in the Mishnah, right? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying you cannot do that. Notein Einav, the most you can do is you look at the right side and you eat from the left side, but you can't actually be metaken the whole thing because it is tikkun. So what are you telling me? It's not considered to be tikkun because he holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He does not hold of him. Well, we don't mean that he holds exactly like him, obviously. What we mean is that since he holds that you don't really need to be physically mala in order to be able to start eating from the thing, so I go one step further. According to Rav Shimon HaLozer, you have to stop eating when you get to that side. I say, what's the problem? Essentially, you've really separated out that truma just by looking at the other side. So what kind of tikkun is this? No tikkun. You're just making sure you don't get to the part that's truma. Okay, so pick it up. What's the big deal? So Rabbi Yehuda is even adifa than Rabbi Shimon HaLozer. He takes it one step further, and he says, once you can eat it without having to move it, so then you might as well move it. And now it's time for the Talisker Rebbe, who is also going to show us his beautiful view at this moment so that we can share with him the Archobas Hadas, which only a Rebbe can achieve. Huh? Look at that. Look at that.
Beautiful.
Archobas Hadas. You're Zorcha to learn Torah mitoch Archava. Okay.
Anyway.
We know what he's drinking. What is Rebbe drinking?
I'm drinking Talisker, man, when I'm in the presence of the Rebbe. Let me tell you. Oh, beautiful. Okay, so we finally get to this Mishnah that we have discussed so long ago in the past. It's part of our deep memories of childhood here, that if you've got a stone that's on top of a chavis, and you need to take wine out of the chavis, so tip the chavis over to its side, let the stone fall off, and then open up the chavis. Mata al tzida vino felet. And that way, you're moving it basically min hatzad, and I need to be able to drink the wine so that I'm allowed to do. Obviously, if it's litzorach, the stone, then I wouldn't be able to do it. But this is a classic case of being allowed to move something min hatzad because of the fact that I need a dover that is mutter. Now, what if the chavis was among other chaviot? And remember that chaviot in those days were quite breakable because they were made out of porcelain. So then you certainly don't want to put it to its side and let the stone smash into the other ones. So then what you can do is you can actually pick up the whole thing, take it to an area where there are no other chaviot, and then bimatat sida vino felat. The same thing is true if we had, as we just had the case, of money that's on your pillow. You're allowed to move the pillow so that the money falls off. That was the discussion we just had, that we need the pillow in the same way that we need the wine. Haita alav lashleshet. By the way, if there was something filthy on your pillow and you want to clean it, just don't put any water on it. Take a Kleenex and take it off. Mekan chabis martut. If it was one of these awful contemporary pillows that are covered with leather or fake leather, then you could pour water on it, because that anyway is not really shayach to kivus, and then you could be not nino le'amayim ach tichle. Now, as Rashi points out, you can only pour the water over. You can't actually wash the leather, because the leather that they use on pillows is soft enough to be shayach to some level of kivus, but not just pouring water over it. I guess Rashi was never the beneficiary of the real modern pillows, which are unusable because they are not softer leather. And that proves that you are a contemporary, truly up-to-date designer in having furniture that is completely useless to use. Omar Avuna Amara, Lo Shanu Ela B'Shocheach. Once again, we need to remember that we've got the problem of Basis Dover HaOser. So if you forgot that Evan, you didn't mean to leave it there, and therefore you were not koveya it as a muktzah because of basis, that's when you can move it if necessary. But if not, then it's naaseh basis ledavar ha'aser. So that means that you had left it there by bein hashmashas on purpose. So then you can't move it there at all. That's the point. Hayta bein hachaviyot, then you're allowed to move it. So I don't really recognize where this comes from. Because, I mean, basically, we said that there's such a thing as tiltul min hatzad. I understand. But then we had started the whole discussion today about moving something which has something like the child is holding the evidence on, right? So does it really make a difference that, like, I should, if I'm going to be moving it, I'm not moving it directly. I just said I'm moving it with something else. That's not tiltum and atzad. So, like, how do you know that when it comes to a situation where ultimately you're going to be moving the mukta, that it's better to move it by holding something that the mukta is on, assuming that it's not a basis, than it would be to actually just pick up the rock and move it off? I mean, is that necessarily the case? Where do we see that there's such a tana? Man tana de kol hecha de ika isur ve'etera, be'etera tarchinan be'isur lo tarchinan. Show me where that comes from. Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, it's actually going alimba the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Tanan, because in Beitza we learned Benogea, this is Benogea Yontav. So somebody who's Bora Kitty is Beyontav. So you want to get all of your kitniyos clear of their shells. So Beit Shammai Omrim, well, you should be borer the ochel, the ochel. So you have to be borer it, and you eat it, and you don't make a lot at a time. Because alimba de Beit Shammai, borer is usher on Yontev exactly the way that it's usher on Shabbos. So because of that, you would need to be careful not to use a kli, which is more similar to real borer, so in order to be able to do it in a way that you don't usually do it. You would have to be borer the ochel out of the psolet, and not the psolet out of the ochel, and you're only allowed to be borer what it is that you need for your immediate use. Okay, so that was the din that we had before on Shabbos. Beit Shammai applies that even to Yontav. Whereas Beis Hillel says, no, there's no iser of borer, and you can be borer kedarko, which means you could take out the psolet. And you do this, I mean, you don't use mamish the kli, like a sifter that you would usually use, but you can use even doing this becheko, betamchui. That would be like spreading out your skirt, putting the stuff on your skirt, shaking it to be able to get off the pieces that would fall out. Or you take a very big plate and you spread it out on the plate, which makes it easy to be borer, even though you're not using a sifter, but this was Darga 2 of Borer, which we don't do on Shabbos. So anyway, how does Reb Shimon Gamliel get into it? Comes along Reb Shimon Gamliel to say, now, just wait one second. There's also an issue of Tircha over here. So the only time that Beis Hillel said that you could do this is where it's less Tircha, because it's talking about you've got more Ochel than you do Psolet. So if you take out the Psolet, you're not being much riach more. But if it would be the other way around, and you would have psolet meruba al ha'ochel, and so then everybody would be made, even Beis Hillel would be made, that then you should be taking out the ochel for another reason, not because of the din of borer, but because of the din of tircha b'yamtev. So that means that according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, if you have a choice in the matter, then you should always be touching that which is mutter. And it's only where you don't have a choice that you would be touching the dover that would be awesome. Wait a minute. I don't understand what you're saying. In our Mishnah, even Reb Shimon ben Gamliel should be made that you should be touching. What's harder? Explain to me. Is it harder to lift up a 40 kilo barrel with a stone on it? Or is it harder to pick up the 5 kilo stone? And you're saying that if it's more tircha, I mean, I understand the yesod. But I mean, the bottom line is, there's certainly going to be more tircha involved here. So then what good is it to hold like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel should say, okay, but in this case where you're going to have to end up picking up this whole big barrel, obviously, in that case, you should better pick up the stone. So how did you explain the Mishnah? Here it's the same case as Ochel Meruba al HaPsolet. No, it's not true. Because now we're going to learn this like Rashi. So Rashi says, the point is like this. Ultimately, if you want to get the wine out of this barrel, you're going to need to pick up the barrel to pour out the wine. So then what that means is that ultimately, you're going to end up picking up the barrel. So you can't take into consideration the extra weight of the barrel in terms of its being more tircha. Therefore, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, look, I mean, the bottom line is, let's take a look at the effort that's going to be expended throughout this entire activity of getting your wine from the barrel. So since over here, lo mishtakalei and not the shakalei, now Rashi takes out the word le'evin, because that's not the point. According to Rashi, the point is, I have to pick up the barrel. So since I won't be able to get the wine out completely until I pick up the barrel to turn it over, so therefore, in the end, I'm going to have to do that. Is going to be more tircha if I take off the stone and then I take the barrel than just to do the whole darn thing at one time, pick it up, throw the stone off, and continue pouring the wine out. Haita ben achaviyot, and if it's mixed with other things, if it's in a place where you're afraid to break something, you can then move it. Tanya Rabbi Yossi Omer, if a chavit was inside of a storage area, or let's say you've got glass things that are near it, and the stone might roll and break them. So then, magbila makom acher mata al tzida v'ino felet v'notel heimena mashet sarich, and then magzira lemekuma ma'ot sha'al hakar. And the next case was you're allowed to shake your pillow to get the money off. Amr b'chi barashi amarav lo shano ela b'shocheach. Here too, remember we've got that good old problem of buses of davar aser. If you left it there on purpose, then you can't do that. You're only allowed to shake off the stone or the money. It's only where you had left it there accidentally. So if you were meniach, if you put it there on purpose, then it becomes a basis to davar aser. Then you're not even allowed to shake it off before. And this is basically, Tosfos says, the same halacha from Rav that we had before about the first part of the Mishnah. And it's just that the Talmidim kept quoting Rav by implications. Because otherwise we say, why would Rav have to say all of these different cases? It boils down to the same thing. Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shana Ala Litzarah Gufa. And this we mentioned earlier. If I need to use the pillow, that makes sense. But if I need the place where the pillow and the money is, which means it's not going to do me any good to shake the money off onto the bed, so then I can move the whole thing away with the money on it. V'chein tanichi barav midifti. Lo shanu ela letzorach gufo, ela levav letzorach mekomo. You move it with the money on it. Again, as long as, of course, it wasn't a basis of davar aser. Okay, now you said I can move the pillow and it'll fall off. Now, this actually raises another question. Okay, so we're being matar. I mean, these essentially are dispensations for mukta to make it easier for me to be able to use what I need and to still have a convenient Shabbos and not to be completely constrained by the dinim of mukta. Now, we have an extension of that din. We saw a really important extension earlier when you need to move a mace, mechama letzel, which would be also totally in terms of dinim of mukta. So we said over there you could be miniach, a kikar, or a tinok, and you can move the body, agav, the tinok, or the kikar. Now that was a real dispensation, was done for kovad ha'adam. Now, how about dispensations to use exactly the same idea, but in order to save yourself from financial loss? Okay, so we had the idea over here that there's a way to use things. Is there a way to move things even though you don't really need it right now? So, Omer Rabbi Shaya, suppose you left your wallet outside and you're worried that somebody's going to see it, is going to take it, and it's in your chutzner, so then you're allowed to put a piece of bread on it or a baby on it, and then you can be metatalit, you can move it to a different location. Now, obviously, the wallet is a basis of davar aser, right? But what we're looking at over here is that since you put the baby on it, so it's considered now to be like a tuffel to the baby. But, I mean, obviously, it doesn't have to be a baby or a piece of bread, anything that is choshev. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, shachach levena b'chatzer. You left a brick out in the chatzer, which is totally muktzah. I mean, over here, we're not talking about a bus, it's a davar aser. We're taking it a step further, where this is muktzah midato, totally, because it's like an evan b'alma. Even that, you could be meniach le'akikar otinok umetaltala, if you think you're going to be needing it for some building or something. And Omer Rav Yehuda bar Shila Omer Rav Asi, pa'am achad, it was once a maisa where they forgot a bunch of floppy disks in a, actually it was a diskia. They were way beyond floppy disks. This was like remember, a diskia is a little briefcase. And it was filled with money, and it was outside in the sratka, which is just a rabbi. So they came and asked Rav Yochanan, so what should we do? So he said, well, You can move it in terms of the halacha muktzah, if you put a kikar or a tinak on it, and then you can move it, and then you'll move it, pokus bi'arba amos, and then it would be okay. Well, there's other ways of doing it. You could get a bunch of people to line up, which we'll see in the Gemara in Erevin. You get a bunch of people to line up and to make a corridor, which is a Rishus HaYochid. And that's really nice. So you get like, you know, 20, 30 friends, and they make a corridor because the people are considered to be a mechitza. So now it's inside of Rishus HaYochid. So now you can move it even without going pokus mi'ar b'am. So we'll examine all of these issues in Erevin. But in any event, as far as the muktzah is concerned, he was matir even this, which is all just for monetary loss. Omar Mar Zutra, all of these things might be true, but again, only if you forgot it. Because if it was left there as a basis, then you wouldn't be allowed to do this. Because if I left it there on purpose, then I should have taken care of it before. Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Shachach Nami, even in a case where you forgot it, you cannot use this idea. Because this concept of kikar or tinok was not a dispensation for monetary loss. It was only a dispensation for a mace specifically because of Kovan Ha'odam. And you can't just figure out a way to move it. Okay, there is a shita that holds that this is only in the cases that we just mentioned, all of which are mukta because of atzma. But if we were talking about a kli shemalachta liyisr, which is much more kal, then you would be allowed to do this even not for a mace. Okay, that's a shita which we don't pass him on. Rav Ashi Omar, Rabaya manach kapa akipe. So Abaye, there was once, these were all actual maisim. Abaya took a spoon and he put it on sheaves. I'm imagining that it probably means the type of kappa that you use to do to do winnowing with, whatever. Or it could be just a few sheaves, I don't know. But the point is, it was just raw sheaves and you move them. Agav the kappa. And Rava took a knife and he put it on top of a raw dove. And he moved it, even though Lachara Tzimotza. Omer of Yosef, so Rav Yosef was pretty sarcastic about this. And he was thinking, you know, these kids are so smart. They always think they know everything. Kama Harifa Shmaitza the Dardike. Ah, brilliant, brilliant bunch of idiots. Emor the Omer Rabbanan. The Rabbanan only said you could do that. Is Dafka in a case where you're Shocheach, okay? They didn't say you can use it Lechatchila. That anytime something is there, you decide, oh, I didn't think about that, I should move it. There was never such a heter. Omar Abaye, excuse me, instead of being so sarcastic, let me explain to you that what I was doing was actually a chumrah, it was not a kula, and he loved the Adam Choshev Ana, which you may not have noticed, but if it's not for the fact that I am someone who is looked up to, I wouldn't have needed to put the kappa on the kippi. I didn't think there's anything wrong with the kippi at all, because obviously, as we've seen many times, it's chazal amizka alayu. If you've got this straw that isn't going to be used, here we're talking about sheaves, it's obviously not meant for firewood, so then you're always allowed to lie on that. I just didn't want people to think that I was moving muktzah in case they would think maybe they could do the same thing for firewood. I said, because of that, I put the spoon on top of them. But that was a chumra b'homa. Omar Rav, and the same thing is true of me. Anna, you laughed at him, choshev Anna. What do I need to put a sakin on a bar yona, for heaven's sakes? Well, you think that you're not allowed to move a bar yona? Chazili lo umtza. It's certainly ro'oi to eat, even though it's raw. It's soft meat, and it's yona tatar. And therefore, I only put the knife on it as a chumrah, that people shouldn't learn the wrong thing. So, wait, you're saying time of the chazili lo umtza, it's because it could be eaten that way, but if not, you wouldn't? So lo chazilu umtzalo, which basically means that you hold Rava of Rabbi Yehuda. Because, I mean, nobody had made this muktza. And according to Rabbi Shimon, why is it muktza? Just because of the fact that you didn't specifically be making it. But I thought Rava had once said to his shamash, Omar Rava l'shame, Tveili bar avza ushedei me'ea l'shunra. Obviously, this was on Yontev. So make a barbecue for me of Abar Avs of a goose, and you can take the intestines and throw it to the cat. Okay, now that is certainly only true of Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon holds that things which became roi for a behema on Yontev are allowed to be given to the behema on Yontev. So if you're saying you can feed it to the cat, because, I mean, this is considered to be, before Yontev, the whole thing was meant to be Michael Oda. And people were not going to eat the low-quality things like that. So it's only roi, so it's basically a kind of neila, that it becomes roi for the cat only now. A libet Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to do that. It's only a libet Rabbi Shimon. And nonetheless, he said you could do that. So apparently he doesn't know the Rabbi Yehuda. So why over here did it have to be roi for him to be eating it ba'umtza? If he owes a Rabbi Shimon, then something that is raw is not considered to be muktza. No, the reason over there is because he said it could be thrown to the cat because I knew that I was going to be shechting this on Yontem. And that if I had waited an additional day to use this as cat food, so Kivan de Masrach would have spoiled. So then that means that before Yontem, I already had in mind to give it to them in this way. And that was Daita Eluyame Atmol. I wanted to use it as animal feed.